Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Well, I'm going to continue talking about Dogen's text, Zui Monkey, which means a record of things heard. This is a record of lectures that Dogen Zenji gave between 1235 and 1237 when he was teaching at Koshoji. And he'd been teaching for about 8 years when he gave these lectures. And this is the book I'm using, which I talked about before, is online, and it's a translation by Shohaku Okumura. So the paragraph that we're talking about today is, "This way is inherent in each of us. Still, our gaining the way depends upon the help of co-practitioners. Though each person is brilliant, our practicing the way still needs the power of other people in the Sangha. Therefore, while unifying your mind and concentrating your aspiration, practice and seek the way together. A jewel becomes a vessel with polishing. A human being becomes benevolent and wise with refining. What jewel glitters from its inception? Who is brilliant from the outset? You must polish and refine. So do not demean yourselves and do not relax in your practice of the way." So that's a paragraph I want to talk about today. So Dogen starts out with the sentence, "The way is inherent in each of us." This is a very key teaching in our school. Some schools say that you have to go through many, many lifetimes before you're capable of becoming realized. Our school says, actually, it is our true nature that is already, in some ways, realized, in the sense that everything, reality itself, is the true nature of Buddha. I talk about this a lot, about Buddha nature. So this means that the whole essence of the world is this interconnected, interpenetrating process, if you will, which from our point of view is a kind of altruism. This process that makes the world is predicated upon the idea that everyone is responsible, every being, everything, and sometimes we don't know what that responsibility is, but it is inherent in us that this is our activity. As human beings, I think we kind of get confused maybe about this, and perhaps as animals and other beings, we just don't even think about it. Animals don't think about their life this way. But as human beings, we have the kind of mind, the way of looking at the world, a self-awareness and kind of intellect in which we think about things in this way. So there is this basic idea in Soto Zen, in Zen in general, that we are already endowed with, because this is the nature of the whole universe, with what we're calling Buddha nature. So we don't have to be all puffed up about it, right? That we're somehow some special beings, because this is true about this bell and the floor and anything that you could name. But it's good news for us in the sense that, you know, we can turn towards this because this is our true nature. It's already inherently existing within ourselves and all things, and we can turn towards this every day, immediately, in each moment. We don't have to wait for something special to happen. Dogen says in Busho, if the time arrives, is the time right now. So we like to say, oh, well, I'll do that if the time's right. I'll do the right thing if the causes and conditions line up that I kind of feel like doing it. But if I don't feel like doing it, then the time hasn't arrived, so I don't have to do that thing, whatever it is. Like, I don't need to apologize because I don't feel like it, or I feel like blaming, or whatever it is. But actually, Dogen's saying, no, the time right now is this time, if the time arrives. We don't have to wait for if the time arrives. The time is right now. So in each moment, we have the opportunity to transform our lives moment after moment after moment. And if we fail in one moment, then there's the next moment. And it is like that. So he says the way is inherent in each of us. And then he says, still, our gaining the way depends upon the help of co-practitioners. So if this model is that everything is interdependent upon itself, everything is connected, then of course we must depend upon everything functioning, its function supporting us, because everything does support us. You can think of it, you know, you're sitting on Zafu's, the Zafu's supporting you. We eat food, the food supports us. Where does that food come from? The sunshine supports us. The whole world supports our life. If it weren't for the whole total connective and interdependent and impermanent world of people and things and whatever we can name, if all that wasn't happening simultaneously, we would not be here. So that's true just in general about this whole system, this way of, and that is, by the way, where compassion comes from. And that is also simultaneously the definition of wisdom. The definition of wisdom is no inherently existing things, persons, whatever. What does that mean? That just means that we're completely interconnected and interpenetrating with each other. And what does that mean? It means that when we deeply understand that, we're going to be responding compassionately and skillfully. So skillful is important. What's skillful in this situation? What's the best way for me to respond? So he says, we can't do that without the help of our co-practitioners. So now we're getting it down to a level of us, right here in this room, the Sangha, our Sangha. We can't do this, our friends, our co-workers, we can't do this without the help and support of the people around us. So in Soto Zen, this group practice is super, super important. We do everything together. We're like those little pictures of, you know, the school children holding hands, you know, walking down the street together. We sit zazen together. We chant together. We attend lectures together. We talk with each other. We do these ceremonies together. All of these things are an embodiment of this practice of we can't do it by ourselves. We have to do it as a group because this is actually how the world works. It functions as a group. It doesn't function as some kind of separate individual event, selfishly looking at the world in the way of, you know, well, what are you doing for me? Because the reality of the world is what are we doing for each other? And when I say each other, I don't mean people necessarily. I mean the whole totality of everything. In Chinese Buddhism came up with this idea of everything is sentient. Everything is sentient. Everything is important. You know, we say walls, tiles, rocks is how they say it, usually the phrase. It means everything is sentient. So this deep belief that we cannot function by ourselves separately, this is that bodhisattva practice. This is this deep doctrine of our school. So we have to help each other. So one of the ways that we do that, you know, usually so I often talk about our interconnectedness and all of it, then go off on talking about that. But what I want to talk about now is I want to talk about the function of forms in Soto Zen. So what's a form? You know, a form is, we say, when you come into the Zendo on Saturday morning, please bow to and from your seat. Or we chant this chant, this opening chant, before we do the lecture. And in a more formal situation, before a lecture, the teacher comes in and does three bows and offer incense, do a formal entrance for a lecture, which we haven't been doing, but that's formally how you start a lecture. So there are various forms that we use, and a lot of the forms are forms that are basically kind of decided on are over the thousands and thousands of years, like doing Orioki, hundreds of years doing Orioki that we do together, which is a kind of form. But the other function of forms, one of the primary functions of forms is that, besides the fact that it kind of keeps us all functioning together as a group, is what comes up for us as individuals when we do the forms. So when I first started practicing at San Francisco Zen Center in my mid-30s, I was at Tassajara, went down to Tassajara and started at Passaic during the summer and ended up staying there for 4 years. Jaco and I were there for 4 years. And so my first summer that I was there, I decided at the end of the summer I really wanted to go to Hokioji, which was the monastery in Iowa run by Katagiri Roshi. So when I got to Hokioji, they were really immersed in the forms. They were doing a special kind of a practice period for a month in which they were trying to, Katagiri Roshi was really interested in reviving all of the forms. And so I think it was called a Betsuin Shishin. And so we would, you know, do everything. We had all this stuff that we did. And I really liked that. I really liked all that different stuff. And part of it was like you go into the bathroom and you click your fingers 3 times, except the Japanese do it differently. They do it like this, which I can't do. But anyway, that's how they click their fingers. So you click your fingers like this 3 times and it sends away all the bad spirits in the toilet, right? You go, you know, like this. And before you go into the bathroom, you bow. So you bow to a little shrine that's there, and then you go in the bathroom and you do your thing, you know, and then you use the bathroom and you go out and you bow. And so there's all these things, and there's a gata that you say before you go into the bathroom, and there's a gata you say before you brush your teeth. And anyway, we really were very immersed in the forms. So I came back to Tassajara, and I think in part because Katagiri Roshi was at Hokioji, and he was Japanese. So I got back to Tassajara, and it was like, I thought, oh, all these people at Tassajara, what a bunch of slobs. You know, they don't really know how to do the forms. Like I have now received this great transmission of the forms, you know, by studying with Katagiri Roshi. And so I was kind of appalled when I went back and realized what a bunch of slobs we were at San Francisco Zen Center. So I felt, like, really, you know, offended and critical of being there in that practice period, had going back to Tassajara. So the other thing is that while we were at Tassajara, so time goes on, and I kind of let go of that because, you know, being realistic, I was where I was. So at Tassajara, I remember that every practice period we would have a different abbot down there, right? So one practice period, it would be, okay, during the Orioki meal, you cannot eat while seconds are being served, and you have to wait until the servers get out of the zendo, and then you can start eating again. So you have to put down your chopsticks and your bowls, and you sit there during seconds, you know, like this. You wait for seconds to happen, and then you can eat. Another practice period would be, no, you can eat during seconds, so just go ahead and eat during seconds. So we would eat during seconds. Our one practice period, it was when you during kinhin, you fluff your cushions and you bow to and from your seat every time. And another practice period, it would be, no, you fluff your cushion, but you don't have to bow to and from your seat, and then unless you're leaving the zendo. So that's another form that we would do. Now here's the deal about all these different forms. So then there's temple style, right? So then you go to a temple and one temple does one kind of variation on something and another temple does another variation. And at Tassajara we are getting kind of a master class in that, because every practice period there'd be some new little rift depending on who the abbot was who came down in the practice period. So now what comes up for us as human beings when all these things are changing? You know, one practice period, it's like fluff your cushions. The other one, it's not fluff your cushions. And so maybe you have opinions about that, like usually we do. So it's like sometimes you feel really critical about it, or sometimes you're happy about it, or all those things that come up. And then there's the issue of usually when we first start practicing, and we learn the forms. First, we have to learn the forms. So that can be pretty stressful. That can be anxiety producing. You know, it's like, do I have it right? Don't I have it right? What's going to happen? Is lightning going to shoot down out of the ceiling because I did it wrong? Is Shinju going to yell at me? Gosh, is Jaco going to yell at me? What's going to happen, you know, here if I'm doing this wrong? It's actually quite amazing, because in some ways we're like catapulted to being back like 4 or 5 years old or something. You know, it's like, do I have my juice now, or did I bring the right towel, or, you know, what's going on here? So that all this anxiety comes up for us. And I have vivid memories of that myself, you know, starting practice. Because, you know, most of us, we want to do it right. You know, we have this inborn desire to, maybe it's not inborn, but anyway, we have a desire that we want to do the right thing, and we don't want to get in trouble, and we don't want to stand out. And so that can be a problem. And then some of the other thing that comes up sometimes, we're like going, well, why the am I doing this at all? Like, why do I need to bow to and from the seat, right? And it's like, I'm just bowing to the wall. Or here I turn around just bowing to a bunch of people who got their backs to me. It's like, you know, what's that about? Why should I bother doing this? Or here's another one. This is a good one. The other one is like, am I worshiping that Buddha statue? Right? People come, they say, oh, well, I don't want to do full prostrations to the Buddha statue. I mean, I don't want to worship idols or something like that. So there's all these feelings that come up and difficulties that we bring up. Then what happens is, so then you actually learn the forms. You're getting pretty good at them. You know, it's like, it starts to feel really good to do them. You know, like, wow, this is special. This is holy. This is like, I'm like pretty good at this stuff. You know? Let's see if I just put my gosh show like this. And yep, it's right here and right there. And I've got that. And okay, now I'm going to like come over from the waist and... oh yeah, I got this down now, you know? And so it becomes very special, and it's like, whoa, that feels really good. That's like really holy, you know? I'm really doing this. So we may be critical of those other people in the Zendo who don't do it the way they're supposed to do it. Like, what's up with that person? I know how to do it. They don't know how to do it. By the way, that's usually when they make you Eno and put you in charge of all the forms in the Buddha Hall. That's when you get to learn how to be compassionate towards all those people that you think are slobs that don't know how to do it. And you have to struggle all the time with your critical mind because you really want to be a good Eno. You want to be compassionate, and you want at the same time impart this knowledge, and you're struggling with your own critical mind. So, as you can see, you know, no matter what stage you're at in working with these forms, something's often coming up, you know? And then you get to the place where you just don't think about it. It just gets incorporated into your body. So there's a koan. Maybe you've heard this. So you get this right. There, you know, when you first start practicing, or before you start practicing, mountains are mountains and rivers are rivers, and then you start practicing and mountains are no longer mountains and rivers are no longer rivers, and then at a certain point in your practice, mountains are mountains and rivers are rivers. So, you know, what we're going for is the last one, where we're just doing the forms. We are completely embody that. We don't have to think about it. It's like it's a complete kind of integrated system. This is practicing together. This is doing this practice together because we're all doing these forms together. And we're all in different stages or having different mindsets. I mean, partly I'm telling you about things that happened for me, but I have a certain kind of mind and you have a different kind of mind. In your mind, you might go to different kinds of issues that arise for you around doing the forms. But they are a powerful, powerful teaching tool for us. And they come out of this notion of we're all doing this thing together, right? We're all doing this thing together. So part of this is that if we're people who've been practicing for a long time and we've learned to form a certain way, and then maybe you come to Ocean Gate or you go to another temple, it's like then we need to be flexible. Then we need to let go of this notion of it being a certain way and just learn how it is at that temple. So we say, well, that's how the style of that temple. And so we just let go of it and we start to learn another way. And we make our best effort to learn that way. So all of these things, you know, it's like it really is a kind of ground central for us to work on various kinds of practice that we need to work on. So I encourage you to come to the Zendo, because there is nowhere else that you can do this practice. And then, of course, that's something you can talk to your teacher about. You can come in and you say, oh, I hate this. I hate this, you know. And then we can have a discussion about that. So you can think of it that way, you know, a little grist for the mill to talk about your practice. So again, this comes out of, in a very, you know, particular way in Soto Zen, this comes out of our group practice. It wouldn't come up for you if you weren't doing a group practice, because you would just be doing whatever you want to do at home or doing whatever feels right for you. And that form pushes you, right? It pushes on you. It's this way that the practice pushes against you. And you can take that, you know, that whole practice, which you might feel like is this very specialized, maybe you think it's a kind of Japanese cultural thing, you know, it's this very specialized thing that you're doing in the Zendo. But as you start to pay attention and become more flexible, all those things carry over into your everyday life. All of those things carry over into going into a new situation. All of those things carry over and become just part of who you are in your response to every situation that you're in. So I'll offer that on that sentence. An alternate translation to this sentence is, it is due to the karmic relations with fellow monks that everyone, every one of you can attain enlightenment. Okay, it is due to the karmic relationships with fellow monks that every one of you can attain enlightenment. Well, I'm not sure that this alternate translation is necessarily a good translation, but I think it's an interesting translation to look at that, because maybe we could, you know, it's not an accident that we're all here together. And I don't mean this in any kind of woo-woo way, you know, but this way in which our, the causes and conditions of our lives have brought us to this moment. The causes and conditions of our lives have said, oh, I think, you know, I'll go meditate. I think I'll go do this on Saturday morning. I think I'll go to Ocean Gate as opposed, you know, to going somewhere else or doing some other practice or living some other life, you know, this way that we have this thing in common that we're all drawn together through these karmic relationships. So, and also we learn from each other that there's this way in which there's this kind of affinity that we have with each other that brings us together. Otherwise, if we didn't feel this affinity, well, we'd go do something else. You know, so this way in which we feel this deep affinity for each other, and also that we're willing to stay and practice with each other out of this affinity. So when something difficult happens, we have this affinity with the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. We have this affinity with each other in which we, this kind of a karmic connection in which we say, you know, I think, okay, here, this is the place that I'm going to stick it out, right? This is the place that I'm going to explore this difficult thing in my life. And I think we have to feel a certain trust and safety with each other that we're willing to do that. And I think that this idea of what he's presenting, he's talking about, you know, it is due to karmic relations with our fellow Sangha members that every one of us has this opportunity to respond with realized action towards each other in this situation. So, so we come together and we have this practice and we do these forms, but we also have like the precepts, for example, where we say, okay, we're all going to practice right speech. So we have this kind of baseline that we agree upon with each other, these kind of dharmic ground rules or guidelines, if you will, that we say, okay, I'm gonna practice right speech. And when we don't practice right speech, because, you know, we're human beings, we get caught and get angry or blaming or whatever, then we can say, you know, whoa, wait a minute, I want to remember my deepest vow is actually to practice right speech, even though it's hard for me to practice right speech. And I know that this other person that I'm talking to has those same ground rules that I do, has that same vow that I do, and even when they fall down, that's that place that they would like to be. So I think that this is really important for us, that we have this shared kind of ethics or tenets or however you want to talk about this sort of shared language, if you will. And lots of groups do this, right? Lots of groups, teachings, religions, various ways of talking about things. Nonviolent communication, right? This, and I mean this as the group that teaches nonviolence communication. They have a certain kind of language and ways of talking about things. And so that kind of shared culture that people have, that they come together, and that it resonates for us. And so we decide to do this particular thing as opposed to something else. Many, many, many things are wholesome, but we gravitate towards something that actually resonates for us as individuals. So this is a kind of a karmic melting pot, if you will, of this Sangha that we come together and that we want to learn together. We want to, all of us, not just you as students or teachers, some of you are teachers, all of us are students, and actually all of us are teachers. So this way that we do this dance with each other, and sometimes we're teachers and sometimes we're students and sometimes we're students and sometimes we're teachers. And that again is part of this practice of togetherness. Like, am I in a vertical relationship or a horizontal relationship? Like, you know, what's happening in this situation? Am I the student here or the teacher? Am I the teacher or the student? What is that? What's the most appropriate response? Or I'm always in a horizontal relationship, and yet simultaneously, sometimes I'm not. Does that make sense? The ground of our relationship is that we're all in this together. So the ground of it is that we are in a horizontal relationship. And yet simultaneously, we're in vertical relationships as well. And those relationships change. You know, I had when I was in charge of the finances at San Francisco Zen Center, I was the financial officer. I had a guy who worked for me who was also a student, and he was also on the board. So when I was at the board meetings, he actually, as a board member, elected board member, was my senior in a way, right? I had a vertical relationship with him. When he was in the office working, I was the boss and he was working for me. So we had a different flipped vertical relationship, right? And also I was senior to him as a priest. So that was a vertical relationship where I was more senior. And then ultimately we are just this way, right? This relationship. So this relationship means that I'm always trying to be skillful, that I'm always aware of the fact that we're both two human beings who are struggling with our own problems and issues, trying to communicate with each other. And then sometimes we're like this, you know? And then we have to remind ourselves of that. So it's interesting, you know, thinking about that. And it's also, it's hard, it's complicated. So it's difficult. So that's why we have the practice. How do we negotiate all these various things? So the next sentence is, though each person is brilliant, and another alternate translations of brilliant can be clever or reasoning mind. So we're talking about a kind of intellectual, you know, certain gift. Though each person is brilliant, our practicing of the way still needs the power of other people in the Sangha. Therefore, while unifying your mind and concentrating your aspiration, practice and seek the way together. Okay, though each person is brilliant, you're brilliant as an individual, amazing, you know. Our practicing the way still needs the power of other people in the Sangha. So again, you know, we're going back to this basic truth about the whole universe is in this together, practicing together, process. And specifically, this Sangha, you know, Dogen's talking about his, the monks at his monastery. So we're talking about this Sangha, not his now, this, because all these teachings, the beauty of them is that we're all human beings, and hundreds of years later, they still are applicable to our situation. He says, we still need the power of other people in the Sangha. Therefore, while unifying your mind and concentrating your aspiration, practice and seek the way together. So, you know, what came up for me as I thought about I remember a particular guy when I was shuso at Tassajara. This guy could sit zazen like gangbusters. I mean, he'd go to the zendo, he'd be solid as a rock, he never moved. I don't know, maybe he went in some kind of trance state or something, whatever was happening for him. But that he felt like, okay, I got it down now, that's all I need. I don't need to practice as a sangha. All I need to do is be able to sit zazen. So he didn't have very good relationships with everybody else in the group because he was busy doing his own thing, and he was quite proud of it, actually, that he was such a great sitter. So here's an example of someone who doesn't understand about the group dynamic of what was going on, and it was hard for him because of that. But, you know, simultaneously, because he was down at Tassajara, which if you've been there, you know it's down at the end of a dirt road that takes 45 minutes to get there. So you're not going anywhere. And there's like, I think my shuso practice period, maybe there are 45 people there or something. So you're down there in this valley. It gets dark like at 3:30. And there you are, nowhere to go with 40 other people. Day after day after hour after hour after hour, and all of you are doing exactly the same schedule. As the same time, you're being individuals doing that schedule. So in some ways, even if he thought he was separate and special and wonderful because he could sit zazen the way he could sit zazen, although I will say that actually he probably technically wasn't sitting zazen, because zazen is about this way in which we are completely integrated with the totality of presencing of this present moment. So it doesn't mean that we're separate, right? It's part of this thing, again, this whole mandala of this practice that we're doing. So in some ways, whether he liked it or not, it was like little magic rays, you know, seeping into his psyche. So as long as we put ourselves in this place, you know, we put ourselves in this place, making our sincere effort, no matter how much we fall down, we get up, right? We get up with the help of our friends, you know. What's that Beatles song? Na 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 na. Right. There we go. Caroline knows the song. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. Do you need anybody? I just need someone to love. Can it be? Okay. Yay. All right, I think you got the idea. Okay, so the next line.
Beatles practice.
The next sentence and the last sentence of this lecture is, a jewel becomes a vessel with polishing. So implied in that is that we need some work. What Suzuki Roshi said, you're perfect just as you are and you need a little work. Right. So a jewel becomes a vessel with polishing. A human being becomes benevolent or compassionate or skillful, any of the kind of words you want to stick in there, realized and wise with refining. So all of us come to this practice, all of us come into this life, you know, with problems. It is inherent in human beings that we've got problems. I don't know anybody who doesn't have any problems. There's this way in which we talk about the Saha world. This is the Buddha field of Shakyamuni Buddha, is the Saha world. That means the world of suffering, that we have problems, and it is through those problems that we learn wisdom and compassion and skillful means. Not some other way, not by being perfect. So Dogen says, you know, a jewel becomes a vessel with polishing. A human being becomes benevolent and wise with refining. He says, what jewel glitters from its inception? Yeah. Right? It doesn't. You have to polish it, you cut it, do all those various things that we do with ore, with this basic mineral or jewel, piece of rock, you know, geode, whatever, that out of that comes this jewel of practice. Who is brilliant from the outset? Who is brilliant from the outset? You must polish and refine. And so then he says, I really like this last line here. So do not demean yourself, because this is something we do in practice in life as human beings. We say, oh, we make a mistake, and we say, I'm so horrible. I'm such a despicable human being. I don't deserve to live, you know, or some variation on that. So please do not demean yourselves. All of us are making mistakes. All of us are saying things that are hurtful. All of us are engaging in unskillful action towards the self or other. All of us feel bad about ourselves when we make mistakes. So I urge you, when that feeling comes up, to remind yourself that you are not in this alone. To remind yourself that we are all in this life together. We are all practicing together. We're all making mistakes. We're all learning to be skillful in varying degrees. You know, you can be really skillful over here and really over there, you know? So this way in which the parts, you know, part of our practice is wake up and figure out the parts that you don't do very well. My teacher said to me one time, well, I don't care what you do right, I only care what you do wrong. Which I thought wasn't very encouraging. But he had a point, which is, you know, what you're doing right is great, so pay attention to what you're doing that's not very skillful. And by the way, I prefer to use the words like workable. Things are workable or not very workable. They're skillful or unskillful. Good and bad, not so good. Right? Because we tend to reify them and put ourselves in categories. Bad, oh, I'm bad, I'm evil, I'm horrible, I've done this terrible thing. You know, or I'm good and I'm special and I'm amazing and brilliant. And we, you know, it's like we don't need those categories. And so this way that we really just look at our problems and say, yeah, there's work I need to do on this. And at the same time, my problems are also the source of compassion and empathy. Because if you didn't have problems, you would have no empathy, because you wouldn't know what it was like to have problems. And if you didn't have problems, you wouldn't be able to be compassionate, because you wouldn't understand what it was, you know, as in English, compassion, passion with. You wouldn't understand to have compassionate towards each other. So, and then he says, and do not relax your practice in a way. So this is this way that this is kind of like, I like to think of it as like, how do we make our best effort with no gaining idea? How do we keep practicing, making our best effort, and not beat ourselves up? So, you know, it's like kind of like Goldilocks. The, you know, not too much, not too little. Somewhere in the middle. And again, we do this with each other as a Sangha, and this is also why we have teachers. Because this way of, you know, this way of some way of saying, okay, you're going way over here to this side. You don't need to beat yourself up. You don't need to go way over on this side. Or, you know, maybe you might think, I don't meet very many people who are so arrogant that they kind of need to be knocked down. Most people fall in the other category. So, but, you know, that way that we try to find that balance, you know, that center point in our lives. Okay, thank you very much. Mm-hmm.